Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we address the impending and looming population collapse. What? I thought we're going to overpopulate our planet. No. We have a looming population crisis that no one is talking about. We also talk about income disparity and what President Trump is doing about it. Before we get started, please consider supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. Chip in $5, $10, $50, $100 if you can at charliekirk.com/support. It helps underwrite the costs of our entire team. Get one friend to subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show if you can. Make sure you're subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, your podcast provider. Show us you're subscribed by screenshotting it and emailing us freedom@charliekirk.com. When you do so, you will be in the running to win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine. Big episode in store. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
As you know, we have been devoting a lot of time on this program to defending the middle class. We even put together 10 ideas to reinvigorate the middle class and help family formation and marriages stay intact. Conservatives have struggled to address this topic for years, and quite honestly, a lot of conservatives even ignore this problem exists. Conservatives in the classic free market sense have always been, in some ways, blindly devoted to dogmatic market principles and the invisible hand. And yes, I love free market policies and principles and ideas. Milton Friedman is one of the most important thinkers that I look to that inspired me to get involved in politics in the first place. However, we have to acknowledge that there is real income and wealth inequality for the billionaire class versus the rest of America, and it's growing. Now, we have to ask ourselves first, why is it growing? Is it a bad thing that it is growing? Is it worth addressing? And what are the more systemic issues that might arise from this sort of inequality that exists? So before we get into this and we talk about how President Trump addressed it over the weekend, I want to be very clear. I'm not someone who wants to admonish an individual just because they are able to create wealth. I have said this before on college campuses, and I'll say it again today. Just because someone got rich does not mean somebody else got poor. Just because somebody else is able to accumulate wealth does not mean that they did it by exploiting another person. In fact, most of the time when individuals are able to accumulate wealth, they did so by freely cooperating and trading with partners or people or individuals and were able to give value for value. The deeper I dive into what has happened since the pandemic, that still remains true. However, there are examples of certain individuals that are able to use their institutional incumbent advantage, a pseudo-monopoly, to be able to have such incredible amounts of market advantage that it begs the question, is it the best thing for the country? And if this is happening, what does the middle class think of it? Will they start to lose faith and hope in the system? So let me be even more clear. I actually think billionaires should exist. Bernie Sanders does not. I believe in hierarchies. I believe in earned success. I believe that someone should be able to take a risk in the marketplace and be rewarded for that. I think entrepreneurship is a beautiful thing. When you are able to have a good idea, work hard at it, perfect it, take a risk, and then see that risk benefit yourself, the community, the country, and possibly the world. However, we are not honest with ourselves if we say that every single person on the planet is going to be an entrepreneur. There are millions of people that have no interest in being an entrepreneur. They want to go to work, raise a family, go to church, and live what I would call a stable and normal life. Who's communicating to them? What party represents them? Well, it used to be the Democrat Party. And now the Republican Party kind of backed into the... Now the Republican Party kind of stumbled backwards into being a party that represents the American working class. The Democrats have made a very risky wager. You see, the Democrats, they basically want to represent America's elite and ruling class and America's permanent government dependent class, essentially the top 1% and the bottom 30 to 40%. Their pathway to political monopolization and power is to get unlimited amount of campaign contributions from the Silicon Valley elites and from Wall Street, and also grow the amount of people that are dependent on the government, and also shrink the amount of people that are independent of government control. Their vision for America is one where more people are on food stamps, not less. Their vision of America is where Google has more power, not less. And I want to dive into what President Trump said about this, because it's very provocative, it's very interesting, and it caused a lot of headlines. But there's one thing that I know about home security companies. We're going to talk about crime later in this show. And we've talked about how there are rapists on the streets, murderers that are being released from prison. It's a scary time. And you need home security. There's a lot of options out there. And there's only one no-brainer that I use that you should use. It's called SimpliSafe. You've heard me talk about SimpliSafe before. I've gotten tremendous feedback from our listeners that have used SimpliSafe to secure their families, to create quiet and peaceable communities. SimpliSafe has everything that you need to protect your home with none of the drawbacks of traditional home security. It has an arsenal, that's right, an arsenal of sensors and cameras to blanket every room, window, and door tailored specifically for your home. It has professional monitoring that keeps watch day and night, ready to send police, fire, or medical professionals if there's an emergency. You can set it up yourself in under an hour. Just peel and stick the sensors exactly where you need them. No technician required. And there's no contract. No pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print. All this starts at just $15 a month. We're not the only ones who think SimpliSafe is great. U.S. News and World Report named it the best overall home security of 2020. Try SimpliSafe today at simplisafe.com/Charlie. So visit SimpliSafe.com. .com/Charlie. You get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. There's nothing to lose. There's lots of bad guys out there. Go to simplisafe.com/Charlie. That's simplisafe.com/Charlie. So over the weekend, President Trump proved he is a champion of the American middle class and a disruptor in chief. He challenged traditional Republican orthodoxy and political establishment orthodoxy when he responded to a Business Insider video that showed the net worth of wealthy CEOs like Amazon's Jeff Bezos, whose net worth rose by an estimated $48 billion from March to June. Zoom founder Eric Yuan, he saw his net worth increase by $2.5 billion. Former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, he got $15 billion richer. Casino billionaire Sheldon Adelson, $5 billion. Elon Musk, $17 billion. This is the first time that President Trump has indicated that wealth disparity was an issue that needs to be fixed. The Business Insider video proposed ideas to combat the wealth disparity with ideas such as forming a pandemic profiteering oversight committee. Awful idea. More regulations to keep billionaires from offshoring their profits. Good intention. Awful idea. Including an emergency 10% millionaire income surtax, a wealth tax, and a progressive estate tax. And a dramatic federal spending on charities. So the president was not endorsing these fixes, just that there is a problem. I mean, in 2020, we have seen Amazon stock go to record high, Walmart stock go to record high, Apple stock go to record high, Google's record high, Microsoft record high, Facebook record high, and the founders of these companies $168 billion richer this year. And U.S. small businesses, 22% of them are closed forever. So some of you might say, Charlie, what's the big deal? All these companies work hard, they provide products, they should be rewarded for it. I agree with that in theory. In practice, I see something much more troubling, much more concerning. I see a ever-growing trend, and it's called the Matthew Principle, which is a right out of scripture, where much will be given to those who have a lot, and those who have nothing, everything will be taken. I'm paraphrasing the scripture. Essentially, in times of crisis, you get more of what you already have. In times of crisis, the extremes only get more pronounced. So Amazon, who has incredible access to capital, they are able to take advantage of a crisis. And I'm not saying taking advantage is all a bad thing, but they're able to take advantage of the crisis, which does hurt small businesses. And so if you are asking me where this is going, I'm very concerned about this. And I'll build out that argument in just a little bit. In a general sense, conservatives believe that billionaires are a good thing. Now, I want to be more clear about that. I wrote this note as I was preparing for this show. Conservatives believe that billionaires who had good ideas and earned their way to become billionaires are a good thing. We as conservatives believe that they became rich generally through hard work and convincing incredible amounts of people to buy their goods and services. This is not an easy thing to do. It's not. You have to create something pretty spectacular to get to that level of wealth. Now, we should not necessarily penalize or demonize the rich. We should make it easier for more and more Americans to succeed. This is a major ideological difference between the left and conservatives. What the president is doing here is a master stroke of political genius. He has recast the Republican Party as the party of working men and women and the party of the middle class. The Democrats have truly become the party of white urban progressives and coastal elites. And the low-class working voters are those people that are perpetually dependent on the government, or they might not work at all. The president's positioning has helped him win over people who work with their hands and shower before and after work. This is a very important point. President Trump was not advocating for any policy prescriptions to this. Instead, he was making the correct observation that if this goes left unmentioned, all of a sudden the American middle class is going to lose faith in the system. When your middle class loses faith in the very system that they live in, that is when economic and societal nihilism sets in. Nihilism, best described, is the belief in nothing, that nothing matters, my actions do not matter, how hard I work does not matter. I'm going to act as if there is no judgment, there is no ultimate authority. I'm going to do whatever I want to do because there is no consequence to what I do. A belief in nihilism is a miserable existence. Most of the people in the streets are extreme nihilists. They are Marxist nihilists. That's why they find comfort and pleasure in destroying things that are not their own. That is why they find meaning and satisfaction in widespread urban arson. And so the president is rightfully pointing out a much more deeper philosophical, psychological, and cultural truth. When the American middle class is not allowed to go to church, when the American middle class is not able to host a 10-person religious ceremony, when the American middle class has seen their home values plummet in the last 6 months and their property taxes go up, and their personal debt increased tremendously, when the American middle class is told that you can't go to work anymore, and then all of a sudden they see Jeff Bezos, someone who gives very little of his own personal wealth to charity, and his net worth go up by an extraordinary amount, the American middle class starts to wonder if the game is rigged. That is a very dangerous thought to allow to continue. I do not believe the game is rigged. For the record, I don't. Do I believe that it is more difficult than ever for working class families to get ahead? Yes. Mostly because of left-wing big government policies, not because of the free market, not because of capitalism. My observation is I am in agreement with the data that I see that the American middle class is struggling, but my policy prescription is completely different. I think that economic freedom, private property rights, entrepreneurship, stable families, allowing our manufacturing to come back to this country, all those things actually result to an American flourishing middle class. And speaking of the middle class, America is ready to get back to work. But to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. You see, with NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone. That's right, you'll be agile. Work from anywhere and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. I've made the switch, and you should too. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide right now, 7 actions businesses need to take right now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Kirk. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Kirk, netsuite.com/Kirk. Orrin Cass, who is an economist, has this incredible statistic. In 1985, it took 35 hours of work per week to support a family of four. Now it takes over 53 weeks of work a year to support a family of four. So Orrin Cass, the economist, he then postulates that means we get fewer family formations, we have fewer children because of the cost, which we'll get into later in the show. It's a lower quality of life, higher stress levels, a greater susceptibility of falling to socialism and even communism. This last point is the point that we as conservatives don't talk about enough. We hate socialism. We should. Marxism is evil. I have entire podcasts dedicated to how evil the ideas of Marxism, totalitarianism, and authoritarianism is. Too rarely in the conservative movement and in conservative circles do we ask ourselves the question, how does this Marxism actually formulate in a country that is very wealthy? It happens when the people that are the laborers, it happens when the people that are your workers, they see their net worth go down while they see the ruling class's income and net worth go up astronomically. I admit, Marxism is tempting. It is a promise that you no longer have to work. It is a promise that things can be delivered to you free of cost. We must understand that freedom thrives with opportunity, freedom, and hope. The hope that you can have a vibrant and flourishing family. The hope that you do not have to depend on the government to find meaning. So as the income gap is growing, consider a few facts. According to Pew, in 2018, households in the top fifth of earners with incomes of $130,000 or more brought in 52% of all U.S. income, more than the lower four-fifths combined. In 1968, by comparison, the top 20% of earners of households brought in 43% of the nation's income, while those in the lower four income quintiles accounted for 56%. Among the top 5% of households, those with incomes of at least $248,729 in 2018, their share of the U.S. income rose from 16% in 1968 to 23%. So to make sense of this for you, a smaller and smaller group of people are responsible for earning the most amount of money. Now, part of this is because of government dependence, and part of this is because people are not in the workforce the way they should be. But another way of measuring inequality is to look at net worth, or the value of assets owned by a family, such as a home or a savings account, minus outstanding debt, such as a mortgage or student loans. In 1989, the richest 5% of families had 114 times as much wealth as families in the second quintile, one tier above the lowest. By 2016, the top 5% held 248 times as much wealth at the median. This trend accelerated after the Great Recession of 2007-2008, and it accelerated during this pandemic again, especially for the billionaire class. This happens because we continue to print cheap money. Cheap money helps the ruling class, not the workers. We continue to pass bailouts for our massive mega corporations, such as our airlines and our banks, and the workers are left behind. So what exactly is happening? Well, there's a number of different root causes. You see, the increased globalized nature of the economy has not been totally perfect for the American middle class. We were hypnotized and persuaded by so many people in the ruling class that this was the best thing that ever happened. The fact that we hollowed out our heartland and our industrial base. When we offshored our jobs to China in the developing world, we were told that this will make us richer. Now, mind you, this took millions of good-paying jobs with it. And there's a half-truth of comparative advantage. I was always really confused, and I did not articulate this as well as I probably could have growing up, when people in the free market community, of which I have a lot of respect for these people, they said that comparative advantage and offshoring jobs, that it was nothing but a good thing for America. I was always really confused by this. I said, nothing but a good thing? You're trying to tell me that there's no losers in this? I just couldn't wrap my head around that. And now I can understand why I was originally confused. I was confused for a good reason. Because of course, when you shut down a manufacturing plant, there's no guarantee that all 600 of those workers are going to find meaningful work afterwards. They're not going to slip into drug addiction. They're not going to get on government dependence and lose meaning. Look, there's also a pure scalability of modern technology, which is a new dynamic we could never anticipate in previous generations. The scalability of Standard Oil, for example, was very massive. Same with Ford and General Motors. But those industries required far more manpower than modern technology. Now consider Apple, which became the first company with a $1 trillion market cap in 2018, making it the quote, largest company in the world, but only in terms of market capitalization, not in other key measures. Fortune magazine first created a roster of America's 500 biggest corporations in 1955. In 1955, with almost $10 billion annual sales, thanks to its 54% share of the U.S. auto market, General Motors, GM, topped Fortune's list that year. But GM was also big in every other way. Stock market valuation or market cap, where it was number one, assets, number two after AT&T, and employment, number two, just after AT&T, at 624,000 workers. For much of that post-war era, the biggest corporations were big in every way, and market cap was very highly correlated with revenues, employment, and assets. Now, that's not the case anymore. The post-industrial corporation of today, thanks to globalization and pro-China trade, is often heavy on market cap, but, like Apple, light on employment and hard assets. Apple doesn't own enormous factories to manufacture the iPhone or much of its products. Foxconn does, and they have a lease agreement with them. Apple does not have much in terms of hard assets relative to its total assets. Apple is not even among the top 50 largest employers in the United States. They are not unique. So in 1968, the most valuable companies, IBM, AT&T, GM, Exxon, and Kodak, they employed a combined 2 million people. In 2018, the most valuable companies, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Facebook, they employ a combined 918,000 people. So the most valuable companies employ less people, and that trend is only going to accelerate. If you look another 20 years out from now, in the year 2038, the most valuable companies will probably employ less than 500,000 people. You're able to do more with less human beings. Now, the pure free market fundamentalists will say that's a good thing. You are more efficient. It's a good thing through one metric. It's not a good thing when you're trying to build a sustainable middle class in a functioning country that doesn't allow a socialist revolution to occur. These are good paying jobs that we no longer have. These are jobs that were able to sustain a family, able to fund local churches, able to keep small businesses alive, able to fund a future. So look, we have to also acknowledge that government rules and regulations have contributed to an unequal playing field. This helps benefit larger companies to stay in power, to acquire competition early on when they are still cheap. They are able to write rules and regulations that protect them and lobby our feckless representatives to protect them. So take this for example, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which gave social media companies legal immunity from being treated as publishers of content. So if a user posts something libelous, Twitter or Facebook is not held accountable. They are treated as a platform, even though they are obviously a publisher. They have used this protection to amass massive amounts of influence and wealth. Meanwhile, they have soaked up a disproportionate amount of ad revenue, bankrupting local newspapers, for example. This has led to the concentration of reporting on the coasts, and therefore to more fake news and the liberal media establishment. This is not the free market at work. This is a combination of regulation, anti-competitive business practices, and monopoly power that we have not seen in generations. Here's another factor to consider. Government bailouts. Another way the government has meddled in the free market is through picking winners and losers through bailouts. I was incredibly opposed to the bailouts that came with the latest stimulus bill, and I remain opposed to big government bailouts. So the Business Insider video, and they did get everything right, but their observation, I think, is actually something that we as conservatives should not reject outright, points out that during the economic recession of 2007-2008, the government spent over $750 billion on bailing out big banks and corporations. By contrast, only spent $75 billion on reducing interest rates for homeowners. That's one-tenth the money that went to normal middle-class Americans than what went to big businesses and shareholders. Were they too big to fail? I guess. I actually have a different opinion, but maybe they were. Maybe there's something I'm missing. But here's the bigger question. Would those companies going under be worse than keeping them afloat with taxpayer money? That's actually an entirely different question. I am not for government bailouts and stimulus in practice or in general. They almost always go to the ruling class elite, almost always, not to workers. The government's intervention, however, likely contributed to all the income disparities we see today. This is where we disagree with on the left. The left thinks that, oh, look, we are so unequal because of the free market. I say we are unequal, more so than I think is healthy. I think some inequality, of course, is helpful, of course. I'm not saying everyone should have the same income. I'm not saying billionaires shouldn't exist. But I think that the trend that we are going to is an untouchable economic elite and a permanent underclass. I say it's because of government programs that made this happen. That's where I disagree with the left fundamentally. You see, the asset holding class had liquidity to scoop up cheap stocks and other assets, and they were able to fully benefit from the recovery. And they did this again during this last crisis. As the Business Insider video pointed out, the S&P increased 462% during the decade-long bull market, while wages only increased 0.4% from 2009 to 2012. There are three other factors that we need to consider. Number one, Obamacare, which increased healthcare spending and cost for the consumer. This is a major cost of living, which is directly impacted for middle Americans. This increase is unsustainable. Orrin Cass has it as one of the four main cost centers in his Thrive Index. Student loans. Government-backed student loans increase costs by backing loans on increasingly useless degrees. Regulations. Obama oversaw one of the most anemic economic recoveries in American history. Why? Well, because of government regulation and scapegoating of American business. He made business the enemy. All of this is government meddling. All of this is not because of the free market. It is the absence of a free market. It's important to remember that under Trump's economy, before the pandemic, many of these underlying root causes were actually dramatically improving. By empowering small business and through deregulation, the wages of the lowest 10% of earners were actually growing faster than the top 10%. Real wages were actually increasing. By allowing for more competition in healthcare, prices were going down dramatically. Same with prescription drugs. We were seeing the return of manufacturing. We saw the onshoring of trillions of dollars that were once housed overseas. These are all positive steps in the right direction. And we talked about 10 ideas to save America. And I encourage you to go back in the archives of The Charlie Kirk Show. And I encourage you to go back in the archives of The Charlie Kirk Show and listen to the 10 ideas, the moonshot to help save the American middle class. I encourage you to check it out. It's one of the favorite episodes that I have done. And if we are honest with ourselves, it is government programs and government lockdowns that have hurt the American worker and the American middle class. And this is part of the reason why Donald Trump's poll numbers are going up, because they actually trust him with the economy. The middle class knows that Donald Trump will be their defender, which is why his tweet this last weekend was so important. And so before we get even deeper into some of the more underlying causes that are so troubling, who is your wireless provider? Is it AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile? What if I told you that Pure Talk USA uses the exact same network as one of those carriers? Same towers, same exact coverage, but literally costs you half? I know it sounds crazy. When I first heard about Pure Talk, I thought this is too good to be true. But then I looked at their customer reviews, and I actually saw the product work for myself. Sarah from Abilene, Texas says the service is amazing. Love the price, the speed is quick, the reception is perfect. Eugene from Granbury, Texas says good service. Haven't had any problems in our travels. Switching is so easy. This is free money if you do this quickly and easily. And listen to these instructions. You can keep your phone. They'll send you a new SIM card so you can get the same great service you currently have, but at half the price. Listen to this. It's unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigabytes of data for just $20 a month. For college kids out there, you cannot get a better deal. And the average person is saving $400 a year. So why is it so much cheaper than AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile? No retail stores, no $1 billion a year ad campaign. So here's what you do. Unlimited talk, unlimited text, plus 2 gigabytes of data for just $20 a month. All you need to do is grab your mobile phone, dial #250 and say keyword Charlie Kirk. That's #250, say keyword Charlie Kirk. And when you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. It's easy. It saves you money. I highly recommend it. So all of these economic challenges have real life effects. I saw an article on Bloomberg.com, not exactly a go-to destination for me lately. Bloomberg treated me nicely many years ago, and they sometimes treat me fairly, sometimes not so much. Not a fan of their owner, but I still read them. I think they actually have some thoughtful stuff every once in a while. I saw this article, and I couldn't believe it. And this is a fire alarm. This is a red alert. This should make everyone stop and pause and ask themselves, what are we doing to our country? Bloomberg.com, July 29th. Americans aren't making babies, and that's bad for the economy. So that's the headline. Here's the subheadline. The U.S. could see 500,000 fewer births next year, which will have repercussions long after the pandemic is over. This is by Peter Coy. I encourage you to check out this article, and I source it on charliekirk.com. We will put it on there for you to check out, charliekirk.com. This is a massive story. Just to give you an idea, the United States fertility rate in 2006 was around 2.1 children per woman, what demographers call the replacement rate, versus what 1.5 is for the European Union. Now, the United States rate is below 1.7, and that's no longer even assured. It's going to drop further. We need to take pause, and we need to ask ourselves, why are people not having children? And this is something that I think the Republicans get so wrong. Republicans get this so unbelievably wrong because they say, well, it's because of nothing but culture. I think it plays a big role, probably the biggest role, but it's not the only role. It's not the only input in the equation. It's not the only ingredient in the recipe. Economics plays a huge role in this. People don't think they can afford children anymore, and they're right. Look how expensive it is to have children. What we are up to right now is population collapse. That's right. If these trends continue and the entire world becomes some variation of Aspen, Colorado, where some homes are going for $2,000 a square foot, cash, where they're paying $28, $30, $40 million a home, and the underclass in Aspen, Colorado don't own anything and they can't have children, they can't take someone off, they can't take someone out to a date, let alone accumulate wealth, what does that mean for our country? Well, that means we are going to see widespread population calamity. This is not even a question anymore of the replacement rate of natural-born Americans, which a lot of people focus on. This is much broader than that. This is, are we going to continue to have a civilization that can sustain itself? If you look at young men in particular, an extraordinary amount of young men by the time they reach 30 will not be getting married. By the time they reach 35, they will not be getting married. Young women are far less likely to marry than any other time in U.S. history. And when people do get married, they're having fewer and fewer children. So what if the GDP goes up? If we're not having fulfilling and flourishing families, what kind of country are we living in? Is all that matters just gross domestic product growth? Is that the most important thing? I actually think we should judge a country's success on a variety of different metrics. For example, are you able to have a country that doesn't have a suicide rate that goes up every single year, like ours does? Is it easy to have 4 or 5 children if you so choose. I don't mean easy in raising them. Is it comfortable economically? Are you able to do it? Does the mother have to go in the workforce immediately after having the child because of how much everything costs? If we do not have good answers to these questions, then we are not actually social conservatives and we are not Republicans that care about strong families. If we are nothing but just saying we need economic freedom for everyone all the time, corporate tax rates, I agree with those things, by the way. And we're okay with America having 500,000 less children, we are not going to have a country. By the way, there was a myth out there that, oh, the Hispanics are going to have more children and they will keep the birth rate up. Not the case anymore. Hispanic birth rate is plummeting, plummeting, all but disappearing. When I talk to young people, a lot of them say, well, Charlie, I can't find someone I want to marry. Very common piece of feedback. It's number one. Number two is, I might have found someone that I want to marry. I don't know if I want to bring kids into this world because it's such an awful and broken world. Awful reason, by the way. Number three is, I can't afford it. And number four, it's, what's the point? So it's some sort of societal nihilism, which is just depressing and dangerous. This right here should be the headline that every American should know by heart. 500,000 less children are about to be brought into the world voluntarily. And you just look at the deeper numbers here. If you do not have a civilization that can continue to have a birth rate to sustain itself, then all of a sudden you're either going to have to supplement that through cheap immigration. What I mean by cheap immigration is low wage immigration that brings down wages and basically cheap labor immigration is probably a better way to put it, cheap labor immigration, or through some form of incentive structure to have people have more children. And this is actually a perfect transition to how I want to end the program, of something that President Trump signed that is terrific. See, the president understands the dangers of cheap labor immigration. President Trump just signed an executive order to protect American jobs from foreign labor. President Trump took action to prevent Americans from being displaced by foreign workers and offshore labor using federal dollars. The new executive order combats the misuse of H-1B visas. The U.S. H-1B visa is a non-immigrant visa that allows U.S. companies to employ graduate-level workers in specialty occupations. These jobs are supposed to require theoretical or technical expertise in specialized fields such as IT, finance, accounting, architecture, engineering, mathematics, science, and medicine. However, corporations have far too often exploited the H-1B visas to replace qualified American workers with low-cost foreign ones. The administration is finalizing guidance to close loopholes and stop employers from moving H-1B workers to other employers' job sites to displace American workers. This executive order directs all federal agencies to focus on hiring Americans for lucrative federal contracts. Well done, President Trump. It also requires the only U.S. citizens to be appointed to the government's competitive service. This decision follows the news that the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, planned to outsource 20% of its technology jobs to companies based in foreign countries. I mean, this is an outrage. The TVA, of course, was created in the 1930s by FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and his New Deal program. It is federally owned. That action would have put more than 200 American jobs at risk during a global pandemic with 25 million people out of work. The TVA CEO, the Tennessee Valley Authority CEO, Jeff Liesch, has now, quote, indicated a very strong willingness to reverse course. I hope so. This is the creativity and the bravery of President Trump. What other presidents would have done this? President Trump's poll numbers are going up because the president is restricting immigration, putting American workers first, and has a very clear vision of how the American middle class is going to succeed and thrive. The middle class trusts him. President Trump should come out and say, I want to get the American birth rate up. The left would lose their mind. President Trump should say, I want to make it easier for mothers to have kids. The left will lose their mind. He will win in a landslide. This is an issue that concerns everyone. What could be more important than your children or your grandchildren? And for those of you that are listening that have grandkids, you should be very worried about the world that your kids are growing up in, your grandkids are growing up in. Very worried. If the birth rate is going down by 500,000 now, we are going to see population collapse. We must get serious about middle class economics. We must get serious about why these trends are continuing. And if the Republican Party becomes the party of strong and stable families, becomes the party of middle class workers, not just stock market gains, we'll win every election convincingly. Email me your questions on this podcast, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider, Charlie Kirk Show. Hit subscribe. Give us a 5-star review. Screenshot it and email us if you want to win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Check out charliekirk.com/support, and please consider supporting our program. It goes directly to helping underwrite the cost of our entire production team, our travel, our research, and allows us to stay safe against threatened boycotts from the awful left. charliekirk.com/support. Thank you guys so much for listening. We got a big week in store. Make sure to go back and listen to some of the episodes over the weekend. It's well worth it. Thank you guys so much. God bless.